Mary and I have met him. He is a big guy. Not as big as Andre the Giant was, though, even though he did pick him up once and slammed him. Randy Peoples put out an email today about something that Hulk Hogan posted on his Facebook page. Did anybody here see that email? Good. Because I'm going to tell you about it. He put this up. In 3 short months, just like he did with the plagues of Egypt, God has taken away everything we worship. God said, you want to worship athletes? I will shut down the stadiums. You want to worship musicians? I will shut down civic centers. You want to worship actors? I will shut down theaters. You want to worship money? I will shut down the economy and collapse the stock market. You don't want to go to church and worship me? I will make it where you can't go to church. And he went on and he said, if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and will heal their land. He ended it with, maybe we don't need a vaccine. Maybe we need to take this time of isolation from the distractions of the world and have a personal revival where we focus on the only thing in the world that really matters, Jesus. So, Hulk Hogan wrote it and posted it on his Facebook page. He's got millions of people that follow him on Facebook, I guess. So, you know, all of the movie stars and musicians. Sorry. Some of them practice both. Some of them practice both. They're all putting stuff out about hatred and terror and scaring people and destruction and dying and blaming people and, of course, not blaming where it really came from. Haven't heard that one from anybody yet. Maybe it's in that documentary that is out there. Want to watch it maybe while we're up here. It's a brand new documentary about coronavirus and where it really came from. I saw the first 2 minutes. But, I want to talk today about 17 inches in biblical standards. Does anybody know what this is? Home plate.
Okay.
Home plate. I'm going to set it up here where everybody can see it. You might be wondering what I'm doing with home plate, carrying that around. Why I have it today and what's that got to do with biblical standards and 17 inches? Does anybody here know how wide home plate is in Little League? Mike, you want to take a guess?
17 inches.
What about, and I didn't even know this existed, but what about in Babe Ruth League? How wide is home plate in Babe Ruth League?
17 inches.
How wide do you think home plate is in high school baseball?
17 inches.
How wide is home plate in college football? College baseball. I get them mixed up. It's all you know, propaganda from Rome, numbing of the mind. College baseball, 17 inches. Does anybody want to go out on a limb and guess how wide home plate is in minor league baseball?
17.
How wide do you think home plate is in major league baseball?
17 inches.
What do you know? What do you think that they do with a major league pitcher that can't throw the ball over those 17 inches? They send them to the unemployment office. What they don't do is say, oh, that's okay. You can't hit a 17-inch target. We'll make it 18 inches. Or if you can't do that, we'll make it 19 inches. Maybe 20 inches so you have a better chance of throwing the ball over it. And if you can't hit that, just let us know and we'll make it 25 inches and see if you can pull that one off. What do coaches do? For those that know a little bit about sports and coaching, maybe some guys here have had a coach before. What do they do when the best player shows up late to practice? What do they do if he violates curfew? What do they do if he uses drugs? Do they hold, maybe I should say a good coach. Does the good coach hold him or her accountable? Or does he or she change the rules to fit the player? Do they widen home plate, in other words? See, that's the problem in homes today. With marriages, with the way people parent their children, with discipline, accountability is not taught to kids, and kids grow up to be adults, and then they don't teach it to their children. And that's really the problem, because my generation, in general terms, there are exceptions, but in general, broad terms, was the last generation that was really taught things like accountability, respect, authority. Now, I didn't catch on to everybody. Somehow I missed that class, but it was taught. That was the standards. I told people a lot of the times, cops caught me doing something when I was a kid that I shouldn't have been doing. A cop put me in the back of the police squad, and he told me, he says, you know, I could take you down to juvenile hall, but they wouldn't do to you what you deserve. I'm going to take you home to your father. He pulled up the driveway. I'm sure some of my brothers, sisters told him, hey, the cops are here. He met the cop and me at the back door, and he said, Mr. Carr, do you know what your son was doing? He says, no. So he told him. He says, and I told him the fate he was going to face with you was far worse than anything that I could do to him. Is that correct? My father says, would you like to stick around and watch? He says, no, sir, there's no need for that. I figured you could take care of it. And he got in his squad and he left. And guess what? He was right. Now, I'm not proposing that parents do to their kids what my father did to me. That was wrong. But maybe in that particular instance, I really had it coming. Because reasoning and accountability, I see parents negotiating with their children today. Negotiating with them. Like they're equals. There's no consequence today for children or adults to meet the standards. What do? We widen the plate. This is the problem with schools today. The quality of education is going downhill. In fact, it's in a toilet. It's going down fast, and the teachers have been stripped of the tools they need to be successful, and now the teachers are to the point where they're brainwashed and indoctrinated in these doctrines that they teach our children. And if you are forced to send your children to public school, you have to make an extra effort when they come home to unbrainwash the things that they've been brainwashed with while they're at the government indoctrination centers. It's so important to spend time with your children. Of course, Satan keeps busy, keeps us all busy, and he makes sure that there's always something that has to be done, and then pretty soon you look and your children are grown up and gone. And you know what happens when they grow up? They don't listen to you very much anymore. We're allowing others to widen our home plate in our homes. Where's that getting us? It's the problem with the church also. When powerful people in positions of authority sin, what happens with their sins? They're swept under the rug. They're hidden. No one's held accountable for their actions. They've widened the home plate in every institution you can think about. If I'm lucky, there's one thing you're going to remember from today. It's this. If we fail to hold ourselves to a higher standard, a standard of what we know to be right, that comes from the Bible, the biblical standard, if we fail to hold our spouses and our children to those same standards, and if we're unwilling or unable to provide a consequence when the standard is not met, and if our schools and churches and the government fail to hold themselves accountable to those that they serve, there's only one thing to look forward to. Really, really dark times ahead. We got to keep each other. No matter how good we are, no matter how much we love them, our own children, and most of all ourselves, to the 17 inches. The biblical standard. Now, I'm not saying 17 is a biblical, but you understand what I'm saying. We need to hold, and you have to, you can't hold somebody else to those standards if you're not willing to be held to them yourself. That's called being a hypocrite. Somebody that doesn't hold themselves accountable, but wants to pick on somebody else's flaws and point them out and build your own ego up and make yourself feel less guilty and less sinful, because if you look around hard enough, you'll always find somebody that's doing something worse than you. But isn't it interesting that we only check out the things that are easy for us that we're not challenged with, and we point out those flaws in somebody else? When we all, I don't care who you are, we all have something we're struggling with ourselves. But that's a minor sin, but if somebody else has got a sin that we're not tempted with, well, that's a major one, and look at over there. It's like the magician. Look at over here, over here, over here, and then don't look at the trick that's going around behind the curtain. One of the biggest problems today that we all face is that biblical standards are thrown out the window. Instead of making the Bible the measuring stick, we take society's values, improve them a little bit, and make that the standard. When I say we need to do what is right, no matter how hard or how big the cost is, people think that I'm uncaring. That somehow I'm lacking love. Or some just think, well, he's just a hard ass. If I didn't care, I would not put God's standards above everything, including your love and your fellowship, at the risk of it, losing it, or making you angry. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't make mistakes and say things that I shouldn't. Mary is graciously reminded me or warned me about a couple things that have come out of my mouth that I, while we were up here, that I know have offended people. I talked to Brenda about one of them last night because I didn't want to have offended her by something I had said. That's not what I'm trying to do. Those are my flaws. But what I'm talking about is when it's a biblical standard and you don't compromise and you won't just shut up and bury it and ignore it, or because you really do care about somebody. So you try and figure out a way to bring it up in love, and you just make people angry. Sometimes they even hate you. But what is the biblical standard, and what does God expect from all of us? That's the only thing that matters. And yeah, I don't like people to get mad at me, and I don't want people to get mad at me. But if the choice is compromising and shutting up, and if I'm doing something wrong, how do I even realize it if somebody doesn't come up and say something in love? Now, if you go up there and you say, "Hey, you stupid idiot," you know, that's not the best way to get the response you're after. But if you know that somebody cares about you and they come up and say, "What did you mean by this?" or "Why did you say this?" or "You really hurt my feelings when you said this." There are people here today, a lot of them actually, that I have hurt their feelings and I have said and done things that are wrong. People in your family. But that's one. That's good. Two. And that was not ever my intention. So when you do things, you have to go to people and you have to apologize and say, "I was wrong." Because nobody's perfect. We're all going to mess it up. But one thing never changes. No matter how much we all screw up, this doesn't change. You can throw it out there as the standard, or you can throw it in the garbage. It's really the only two choices. The standard does not change. I don't care what society says. I don't care what people say. God's the same yesterday, today, and forever. Click it. 1 Thessalonians 4:7. Talks about the biblical standard and what God expects from us. It says, For God did not call us to uncleanliness, but in holiness. Therefore, he who rejects this does not reject man, but God, who has also given us his Holy Spirit. The whole reason God calls anybody is for holiness. Not to be popular. Now, he gives us other things too. Yes, there are some benefits. But the reason he called you, see, if you come up to somebody and you say, and it's, most people are too humble to say it, but at least in the back of their mind, they should know you, know this. If you come up to somebody and say, "Why did God call you? Or what did he call you for?" The answer should be to holiness. You think he called you to sin? This week we talked about Israel being prepared to leave Egypt at a moment's notice with their staff in their hand, etc. We're commanded to be prepared to change our minds. That's one of the things it had to tell us. They were going to go through this life-changing experience, and they had to be ready to leave at a moment's notice. Nothing was ever going to be the same again. The memories were just that, distant memories. What they did every day, how they did it, and who they did it with was over. Are you stuck in Egypt or are you ready to leave? Are you prepared to leave Egypt as we go through this in the exercise of putting the leavening and the sin out of our lives? 1 Peter 1:13 says, therefore, gird up your loins of your mind. What's he talking about here? Girding up the loins of your mind. What's he referring to here? What are we supposed to be doing here? Be sober and rest your hope fully upon the grace that is brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. As obedient children, not conforming yourselves to the former lusts as in your ignorance, but as he who called you is holy, you also be holy in all your conduct. Holy, not self-righteous. Don't appoint yourself as the Torah police and go out and arrest everybody else. Verse 16 says, because it is written, be holy, for I am holy. Do we strive to do that? Really? Have we even thought about that? I hope so. But ask yourself and be honest to yourself. Have you even thought about that? Have you even thought about the things this week that you can change in your life, that you can work on? And maybe some of them are, I don't even know how I can change that. But if you're not trying, if you're not praying, if you're not asking God to help you, guess what? It's never gonna change. His standard doesn't change.
It's
one of the things that I was going to talk about. I mean, I was going to put something together on that. It just didn't happen. There was other things. But yeah, we're supposed to examine ourselves. Passover. Okay. What's the reason for the clean and unclean laws? To keep your arteries from plugging up? That's a benefit. That's not the reason. Why should we observe them? For the health reasons? Because God created things? And is there medical reasons for it? Yes, but is that the reason we should do it? Leviticus 11:44 says, for I am the Lord your God, and you shall therefore consecrate yourselves, and you shall be holy, for I am holy. Neither shall you defile yourselves with any creeping thing that creeps upon the earth. See, if you eat the pig, the electric eel, and all the other stuff the kid's song was talking about, yeah, there's penalties that are automatic that is going to affect you. Dr. Andre told me when he was a pagan, Sunday-keeping person, and he'd have clients come in to him, and he's trying to help them with their medical issues and studies, he would try and get them off of the unclean foods because he said he knew that every time they ate it, it was just another little negative against them. Before he even understood that he shouldn't do it himself, he was already eating unclean when he's going to a Sunday Presbyterian church. You shall be holy, for I am holy. Neither shall you defile yourselves with any creeping thing that creeps upon the earth. For I am the Lord who brings you up out of the land of Egypt to be your God. You shall therefore be holy, for I am holy. How many people actually think that they need to be holy like God? Is anybody ever going to achieve that standard? Just one guy did, out of billions and billions of billions. Is there any chance that we're ever going to achieve that ourselves? No, we've all failed already. But that is the standard. Many people think if we teach such a high standard that we're going to lose everyone in the church. They think no one's going to want to seek perfection and everybody's going to give up and leave. I talked with Frank earlier this week, and I was so disappointed of, and this isn't in condemnation, I mean, it really, I felt so bad that people I loved were afraid. Afraid to do what God said. Maybe it's because there's not enough of God's standard being taught. That somehow we think we can get special dispensation. I kept on putting out, I said it at least 5, 6, 7 times. I said, what happens when the mark of the beast is law? What happens when it's something big? If people won't stand up to the government over a small thing like this, and I'm not minimizing it, there is a flu going on out there, and people have died, although a lot more have died that they've attributed to it than really had it. And a lot have died because of the actions that they've taken that won't be counted. Those in nursing homes and those that are can't feed themselves and those that hospice won't even go to their house in their final days and take care of them.
Right.
If those people won't do that, they shouldn't be in that job.
Exactly.
They should be fired and get somebody that's got a half of a heart. Because even if you had half of a heart, you would go help somebody when they need it the most. But people say, if we set such high standards, it's impossible to achieve, so people are just going to give up and walk away. It's not a numbers game. The only way God will use us for anything is if our hearts and our minds are pure. If we teach our children that good intentions are all that's required, oh, it's okay. Don't worry about it. They're going to grow up and be adults, and then what happens with the generations that come after that? Look around. This is the example of what's out in the world today. I don't get mad at children. I get mad at the parents. Talk to Jeff. Kids want to please their parents. It's built into them. They love their parents. Kids are good in their hearts. The Bible tells us that our hearts should become like little children. They're pure. You ever see the kids fight? They fight, and 5 minutes later, they're over it. They're playing again. They're having a great time. Their hearts are pure. Ever see what happens when adults fight? Oh, boy. What will the next generation be like if this continues to be perpetuated over and over? If we teach everybody that we should have diversity and practice acceptance and be so politically correct in everything that we say and we do, I'm telling you, I don't think it's going to be this long, but guess what? I could be wrong. I wouldn't want to be alive in the generation to come. Because I'll be an old man then. And when you think about how old people are treated today in this generation, what's going to happen? And yet you add another generation to it. The grave will be a place of safety for sure then. It's got to stop. It's got to be broken somewhere. And it can only start with yourselves, ourselves. We're supposed to be the light on a mountain for the nations of the world. That's what Israel's purpose was. So that all the nations would say, and I'm paraphrasing, you guys are really weird, but who is this God that you worship? That makes the lowest of people so great. Who is this God? You got to tell me who he is. I got to find out. Because he must be so great to be able to take somebody like you and do with you what he has done. I want to know him too. That was the purpose. They were supposed to be a nation of priests. What, for each other? No. A nation of priests for the world. Instead, because of their sins, he took the only tribe, the only brother that wasn't involved, that stood with, well, they were involved, but when they realized the wrong, they stood with Moses and decided, we've screwed up the standard really big time. We're going to stand with Moses and we're going to do what's right. And he took those people and he said, you got to be a priest over all your brothers, over all the other tribes, because they're so screwed up, they didn't even want to do what's right when they were told and when it was right and smack in their face. And that's what most of the world is like. I'm going to go somewhere where they don't talk about these things. You know what? If somebody's really got that in their heart, what should happen with them? They should go somewhere else, far, far, far away. God loves us with such a deep love that we can't even begin to comprehend it. John 3:16 tells us, and everybody's got this one memorized, I know, but for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have everlasting life. He did something that I don't think anybody in this room could do or anybody listening in the future could do. I know Jeff loves me, but are you going to give up your only son for me, Jeff? No. If you said yes, you'd be lying. I couldn't do it. But that's the goal. Even if we don't meet it, guess what? That's the goal. Now, what if it doesn't cost you your only son? Then it should be easy. But we still don't meet the goal. Go ahead. The thing that the average Christian cannot comprehend is that because of this love, he requires something from us. Let's read Romans chapter 6, verse 1. What shall we say then? Shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? Certainly not, or God forbid. How shall we who died in sin live any longer in it? You realize you're supposed to be dead. All of those sins, the old man, the old woman, it was all supposed to be buried in a watery grave. The problem is, and something we all should know, is we need to carry a spiritual baseball bat with us. And every time we try and come up out of the grave, just whack it over the head as hard as you can. Or do you not know that as many of us as were baptized into Christ Jesus were baptized into his death? Verse 4, therefore we were buried with him through baptism into death, that just as Christ was raised from the dead by the glory of the Father, even so we should also walk in newness of life. For if we have been united together in the likeness of his death, certainly we also shall be in the likeness of his resurrection. You getting an idea of what the goal is like, what home plate to get into God's kingdom is like? Verse 6, knowing this, that the old man was crucified with him and that the body of sin might be done away with, that we should no longer be slaves of sin. For he who has died has been freed from sin. Now if we died with Christ, we believe that we shall also live with him, knowing that Christ, having been raised from the dead, dies no more. Death no longer has dominion over him, for the death that he died to sin once for all, but that the life he lives to God. Likewise, you also reckon yourselves to be dead indeed to sin, but alive to God in Christ Jesus our Lord. I realize this is a very high standard and it's a very hard thing. But all the things that Satan throws in front of us, the temptations, from the toys to the challenges to everything in between, is a distraction. This kind of a standard can split up marriages. If the husband and wife are not on board, if they're not in unity, and if one or the other tries to follow that standard, chaos will come. Does the standard change? See, if you find that your wife or your husband is on a different standard, there's one thing that you need to do. Diane said, so what do we do?
Yeah.
So what do we do? I can't answer it with a blanket answer. There's not a magic prescription that we can write that's going to cure all problems. But I can tell you what worked for somebody that if you looked up in an encyclopedia and you said the biggest butthole on the face of the earth, it'd have my picture in it. And that's what my wife was married to at one time. And I'm not proud of it, but I'm trying to explain something. My own father came to her once and said, if you will divorce him, I'll get you an apartment and I'll provide financially for you just so you can get away from him. And we were on a completely different standard. And she don't like it when I talk about this. But I hated God. I'd cuss out in his front, out in our side yard, cussing at him, calling him, swearing at him, telling him, get out of my life, leave me alone. And lucky he just didn't strike me dead with a heart attack or something like that. Finally, it gets so bad, she'd come out and say, will you please come in the house? The neighbors are watching. It was too embarrassing for her. Then I find out why God wouldn't leave me alone. She knew she couldn't change me. Everybody says, God, please change this butthole. Whether it's the husband, the wife, whatever. Look it, I'm trying to do this. You've got to change. I can't change him. You've got to change him. That's how we all pray, let's be honest. Give me the patience to endure this torture. Why did you give me this for a spouse? Is that what she did? Well, I'm sure sometimes she thought that. I would have divorced me if I was her. She got down on her knees and she prayed for God to make her a better wife. Now, when your wife isn't reacting like you know every other woman should react for the things that you're doing. I mean, it wasn't little things. It was big things. Like suing every judge in the state of Wisconsin. Getting one removed from office. Taking on the government. Suing the town that you live in when she's working for the town chairman taking care of his mother. You think that's a comfortable situation? If we are the type of, the only way you're going to change, and I've told people this too, and kind of in jest, but I'll tell women, say, don't think you're going to change this guy, because the first time you're going to be able to change him once when he gets really old, you can change his depends. That's when you can change him. But a lot of women, they fall in love and they see their prince charming and they kind of know, and they kind of halfway admit some of the flaws, and they think, that's okay, it's going to be so wonderful. I'm going to love him so much, and he's going to love me, and he's going to change. Wrong. God is the only one that can change us. A spouse can't change the other spouse. But if we're willing, and I use this for her, but we got to all do it for ourselves, if we're willing to say, God, change me. Make me better. So that you can say, who is this God that you worship? Guess what? It's not going to happen the first time. Who is this God that you worship? I got to get back to him. I got to get a relationship with him again. Because he's done all these wonderful things. It's like, well, I won't tell you some of the things I said. But it wasn't nice to her. Because I knew what she was doing after she had done it for a while. Every one of us has to stop widening the plate. A husband that abuses his wife teaches his sons that women deserve to be abused. And teaches his daughters that they deserve to be abused by their future husbands. A wife that disrespects her husband teaches her sons that men are worthless and stupid, and teaches her daughters to do the same to their future husbands. A parent that allows their children to disrespect them teaches that child to disrespect everyone. And they turn that child into a selfish monster that will not respect anyone or anything, including God. How damaged or blemished can a sacrifice to God be? We all know that the sacrifices were supposed to be perfect. No flaws. Nothing wrong. Now, it's easy to know that and then just sing just as you are and think that's God's standard. When we're coming to him, when we're sinners, when we're repenting, when we're saying, help me and deliver me, you come to him just as you are, but you don't stay as you are. You don't say, okay, he's forgiven me, so now therefore my sins are forgiven and I have a license to continue to sin. Romans 12:1 tells us, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. What is a living sacrifice that's holy and acceptable to God? If we're all honest, go look in the mirror when this is over. Go stand in the mirror somewhere and look. And that ain't it. I don't care who you are. Now, we don't have to be perfect before we start, but we've got to realize what the standard is and ask God to help us. We're his children, and he loves us. Does anybody here have perfect children? Raise your hand if your children are perfect. So how do you react to your children when they say, what you going to do? I don't wanna. I don't feel like it. Your rules don't make sense. That gets one reaction from you. How about when you know that they love you with everything they have? The minute they think about you, their eyes light up. When you come into the room, they run and jump in your lap. And you know that they're messed up because they're children. They're human beings. They're not as messed up as we are because they haven't lived that long, but they're still messed up. You wrap your arms around them and you love them. And you nurture them. And you try and teach them while you can. What do you think he does with us? Verse 2, and do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Don't go with the world. Don't let them transform you. And when you go back home, when you see someone that's in some kind of a institution, somehow try at least. Do it with love and nice. But try and bring the subject up that somehow they need to do what is right, no matter what the cost. And even if the cost means your life, even if that's the cost for doing what is right, what is the choice we're supposed to make? Don't worry about the boogeyman disguised as, that Satan disguises himself as, that's out there that's going to scare us and hurt us. Even if there's some truth to it, if the choice is death or righteousness, and you understand what the standard is, there is no choice to be made. It's already made before it's ever brought in front of you. It's not horseshoes. You can't just get close where you score points because you're close. Matthew 5:48 says, therefore you shall be perfect just as your Father in heaven is perfect. The words are so clear. How can you twist that? You got to add a word that's not in the Bible. Exactly. Yeah, but. Yeah, but. Well, but it's translated, I think. Could be in the Bible somewhere. Have to get out of concordance and find. But those two words together, yeah, but, that are pronounced as one. One word with two syllables. Yeah, but. That's not in the Bible. What if it costs you your life? You do what's right no matter what. And your crown will be laid up for you in God's kingdom. Do you really want the ones that you love, or your children, or your parents, or whoever it is that you know was righteous, that you know in your heart you're going to be in God's kingdom? They're looking around for you. Whatever happened? What is it? In the ground, waiting a second death. Compromised, sold out to Satan, knew what was right, knew what was required. Now, let me tell you something else, and this is something that we all learn. I don't care what it is, when you stand up for God, the bigger the odds, the bigger the penalty, the higher the stakes, and you see God intervene, and you see God work things out that is impossible to work out without Him, each one of us can be like Moses. Stand back and see the glory of the Lord. What was going on there? Israel was afraid. Oh, here comes Pharaoh. Here they come. And we're trapped. Here's the ocean. Stand back and see the glory of the Lord. Quit cutting off God's opportunity to show you what He's willing to do and how much He loves you. Quit doing it. And do what He says. All you got to do, every time you hear the phrase, home plate or 17 inches, I'm hoping you remember this, because this, I feel, is the most important message that I'm bringing today while we're up here this week. At least it's the one that I need the most for myself. And maybe somebody else needs it too. Thank you.